So I've lived in Canada my entire life, and I've gotten really used to dealing with the cold. However, the JVM hasn't been so lucky, and we see a lot of warm-up overhead in data parallel systems. So I'm here to talk to you today about this work with my colleagues from the University of Toronto, Beiheng University, and Vanna Solutions. So similar to what we saw with Yak, you know, the JVM's very popular, and systems are being increasingly built on it today. If you look right now, Google's the most searched, or sorry, Java's the most searched language on Google. And even the JVM's also very popular for big data applications. Got Spark, Hadoop, Hive, all using the JVM. But what we're also seeing is there's an increasing trend to use latency-sensitive queries on the JVM. We have Spark SQL and Hive directly made just to use and run SQL queries. So with all this latency-sensitive queries, the JVM's performance is being called into question. So does anyone actually understand the JVM's performance? If we do a quick Google search, we find a lot of talk, there's a lot of discussion, but there's no clear answers. One person from Quora says that the JVM's performance has come a long way, but it'll never match native code. Another InfoQ user says that the most obvious outdated Java performance fallacy is that it is slow. But what happens if we hit the disk? A developer from Hypertable, which is built in C++, thinks that if you run HDFS or MapReduce, it's mostly I/O, so Java's acceptable. What if we scale our application? A Stack Overflow user thinks if we scale our application, then Java's probably fast enough. So with all this discussion, there's a clear need for some analysis. So we looked at JVM overhead on data parallel systems, and specifically latency-sensitive queries. And surprisingly, we found that the JVM warm-up overhead often is the bottleneck. But what is JVM warm-up overhead? So JVM warm-up overhead is made up of class loading and interpretation time. Class loading is when we need to load the code and metadata for a class dynamically at runtime. And interpretation time is when we first see some code, we need to run it in an interpreter before the JVM can just-in-time compile it and run it natively. And we consider this overhead because the interpreter is quite slow. So in our study, we found three interesting findings. So the first is that even in I/O intensive workloads, the bottleneck is still JVM warm-up overhead, with the HDFS read spending 33% of its time just in warm-up overhead. We also saw that the warm-up overhead is very high, and it stays constant. On average, Spark queries have to spend 21 seconds just warming up. And this creates a contradiction with the principle of parallelization and JVM warm-up overhead. Because for parallelization, we want to change long-running jobs into short-running tasks. But the only way to amortize JVM warm-up overhead is by long-running JVMs. So this becomes a bigger problem when we have these short queries that are executing really quickly. Lastly, we saw in multi-layer systems, the problem is aggravated. We saw Spark loading 19,000 classes, and only 17% of them are from the actual Spark package, with others being from libraries. So with all this warm-up overhead, we built a new JVM modifying OpenJDK 8 called HotTub. And HotTub reuses JVMs to avoid warm-up overhead, but it does so transparently, requiring no modification. So we saw for a 1 megabyte HDFS read, we can get up to a 30 times improvement. We saw for Spark running 100 gigabytes, we get a 1.8 times improvement, which is 29 seconds in latency. And for a Hive query on 100 gigs, we similarly saw a 1.79 times improvement with 13 second latency improvement. So today I'm going to talk to you about our study, our findings, and then later we'll get into HotTub and we'll see a demo of it. But first, we'll have a quick word on our methodology. So we first studied HDFS because it's the building block for most of these systems. It's also I/O intensive. Then we went on to study Spark and Hive on Tez to see the performance of these latency-sensitive queries. We got the queries from BigBench, which borrows heavily from TPCDS. In all of our tests, the server components were fully warmed up, so they don't factor in. And the cluster we used was a 10-node cluster, with each node having 16 virtual cores, 128 gigs of RAM, and 10 gigabit Ethernet. So to measure the warm-up overhead, we had to do non-trivial instrumentation to OpenJDK 8, which you can read more about in our paper. But understanding the overall slowdown can be quite tricky. We can't just subtract the warm-up overhead from the full runtime, because there's lots of concurrency going on in these systems. So we borrow block time analysis and subtract the warm-up overhead from the individual tasks and threads, and then re-simulate the execution by simulating the scheduling. So now, let's look at HDFS. So in this diagram, we can see the class loading in red and interpretation in blue displaying the warm-up overhead, and we can see it across different sequential reads ranging from 1 megabyte to 10 gigabytes. So we can see that the warm-up overtime is fairly constant, class loading is around 1 second, and interpretation time is around 600 milliseconds. This is because it's the same code path, we're just changing the size, really. But the real surprise is when we look at how much of the overall execution is actually spent in warm-up overhead. And we can see for 1 gigabyte, 33% of the entire execution is still spent in warm-up overhead. We can see that as the size gets big and the overall time of the task gets longer, the warm-up overhead is amortized. But a recent study from Cloudera showed that most of their customers, their Hadoop tasks read and write less than 1 gigabyte, and we saw that for some customers, 60% of their tasks read and write less than 1 megabyte. So this is definitely a big problem. Now, if we look further into the HDFS read, we can see what's going on. So in the top bar, we have the client initialization, which is the time from the client start before it contacts the data node. And then in the bottom bar, we have the time where the client is talking to the data node and they're actually reading the file. So again, we have class loading in red, interpretation in blue, and this time we have the compiled and native code in green. So we can see from this diagram that the warm-up overhead done by the client is a huge problem and pushes back the time you can actually start reading from the disk at all. We also see 21% of the entire execution is just the client loading classes before it can even start reading. So we can see, even when we're hitting disk, the warm-up overhead's a real problem. And there's even more surprises when we look at the actual communication between the client and the data node. So at the top, we'll see the data node's actions, and at the bottom of the graph, we'll see the client's actions. So the read will start with the data node sending an ACK to the client so that they can kick it off, and this takes less than 1 millisecond, it's quite fast. But when the client processes this ACK, it takes 14 milliseconds, and most of it's just class loading. So while this is happening, we look back at the data node, and the data node's been using the send file system call to send around 38 packets, taking around 24 milliseconds. But things get even worse when we go back to the client. Just to process the first packet took 26 milliseconds, with most of the time being spent interpreting the CRC checksum. So this is actually so bad that when we look back at the data node, it has to wait because its send file buffer has become full and it can't actually continue to do I/O. So in the end, we see that the client's execution was so slow because of JVM warm-up overhead that we actually slowed down the data node's I/O. And in the end, the data node sent 109 packets before the client finished processing 3 packets. So now that we've seen HDFS, let's start looking at Spark and Hive and latency-sensitive queries. So in this diagram, for each data set, we ran 10 queries, and then we ranged it from 100 gigabytes to 1 terabyte, and we did this for both Spark and Hive on Tez. So similar to HDFS, we saw the warm-up be constant. So Spark, every query has to spend around 21 seconds in just warm-up overhead, and Hive has to spend around 13 seconds for every query in just warm-up overhead. Similarly, when we look at the green line, again, to see how much of the runtime is made up of warm-up overhead, we see that the execution can take up to 40% of its time just doing warm-up overhead for some of these queries. And one thing we noticed was that for Spark, the overall runtime is quite fast, faster than Hive, but it was spending more time in warm-up overhead. And we observed that the more layers your system has, the more overhead it can have. So we saw Spark load 3 times more classes than Hive. It loaded 19,000 classes than Hive with only around 3,000 being from the Spark package. And this can also lead to more interpretation time. Because we're loading more classes, we have more unique methods now. And for every unique method invoked, we're going to first have to go to the interpreter before we can just-in-time compile it and run it natively. So we're slowing down everything. But surprisingly, even with all this overhead, it turns out that Spark and Hive on Tez are trying to reuse JVMs. It's just that they're doing it within the job. And for these latency-sensitive queries, that job is just too short. So part of the problem is that reusing JVMs across jobs is tricky. We need to maintain consistency such that if you want to reuse the JVM, you need to make sure that its execution is the same as the execution of a normal JVM. So this brings into problems such as we need to make sure any classes that are already loaded would be the same as a new class or the class loaded in the next run. We need to make sure all the data, static data is reset. We can't have any stale data floating around. And this could get even harder if we have a third-party library that we don't really have good access to. We need to make sure we close file descriptors. We have to clean up any threads. And we also have to deal with signals such as sigterm. If sigterm takes down the JVM, we can't reuse it. So to solve these problems, we built HotTub. So HotTub modifies OpenJDK 8 to reuse warm JVMs from a pool, hence the name HotTub. So part of the reason we decided to reuse JVMs is because we made the observation in data parallel systems, there's a lot of opportunity for reuse because even across different applications, different jobs, there's a lot of similar code being run, it's a framework, there's a lot of reuse. And we made HotTub be a drop-in replacement, so you can just replace your JDK and use it with no effort. But let's see how it works. So initially, when there's no JVMs to reuse, there's nothing in the pool, we need to just create a new JVM and run the application as normal. Now, when the application finishes running, we need to reset the JVM before we can add it back to the pool. So we need to clean up any threads, we need to set static data to its type default, and we need to like close any file descriptors. And then once that's done, we can put it in the pool for later reuse. So the next time we run Java, if there's JVMs in the pool, the first thing we need to do is choose a JVM to reuse, and we have to make sure that the JVM we reuse will be correct and consistent. So we have to make sure that any classes that we'll reuse would be the same as the ones we would load in a normal execution. If that's true, then we can reinitialize all the static data and run the application. So now I'll try to show you a demo of HotTub. So it seems the network's down. Try again. Seems the network's still down. I'll continue and try to go back after. So to look at the evaluation as a whole, we saw similar results to what the study implied. So in the study, we saw a constant time improvement, and with HotTub, we also saw a constant time improvement. So for HDFS, we saw a 30 times improvement for a 1 megabyte file. We saw a 1.66 times improvement for a 1 gigabyte file. For Spark on 100 gigabytes, the query with the best speed up saw 1.8 times improvement, and the query with the worst speed up still saw 1.36 times improvement. For Hive on 100 gigabytes, the query with the best speed up saw 1.79 times improvement, and the query with the worst speed up only saw 1.1 times improvement. This is because that query takes quite long to run on Hive, and the warm-up overhead is amortized. In the paper, we have more results, and some of these range from, we can see reusing a JVM that's been warmed up on a different query still produces similar speedups. We saw some hardware counters comparing unmodified JVM to HotTub, and we also saw how the performance improves as we do more reuse iterations. So like anything, we have some limitations. So we have a security problem similar to a timing channel where when you reuse a JVM, you can see what classes were loaded and what methods were compiled beforehand. So we limit reuse to the same Linux user to try to alleviate it a bit. It's not as useful for long-running JVMs as the warm-up overhead's amortized, but we saw for these short latency-sensitive queries, it's still a large problem. And we also break the JVM specification for class initialization on certain edge cases, but these edge cases are actually well-known bad practices. For related work, there's been studies on data parallel systems on the JVM, but they focus on garbage collection, not warm-up overhead. There's also been studies on data parallel systems themselves, but they don't focus on the JVM. So in conclusion, we saw that warm-up overhead is often the bottleneck. We saw that it can bottleneck even IO-intensive workloads. We saw that it stays constant and expensive. And this can be a problem for these short queries and when parallelizing with the JVM. We also saw that multi-layer systems aggravate warm-up overhead. Finally, we saw that Hot Tub eliminates warm-up overhead through transparent reuse. And we open-sourced everything, including our instrumentation, on GitHub. So I'll quickly try the demo again. Seems to be working. Oh, it's really small. Oh, sorry. Okay, let me increase the font and we should be good to go. Okay, so first I will clear the page cache so that we get a pretty consistent run. Okay, sorry. And then I'll quickly run a 500 megabyte HDFS read. And we saw it only took 2.6 seconds. So I'll run the same thing with Hot Tub. And we can see all we needed to do was add a flag. I can't see it on my computer. But I think that doesn't... Sorry, I think that doesn't have the flag. Yeah. Sorry, it seems that demo is not working right now. If you come to the poster session, I'll show it again, and hopefully it'll work better. I'd like to take any questions now. Oh, this is, oh my god. It was using Hot Tub the first time. Okay. Yeah, so it turns out it did work. I didn't realize. So the first run was actually using Hot Tub. And the second run that took 6 seconds wasn't. Sorry.
Okay. Hi, this is Chi Peng from KCSN University. So in your flowchart, you have the JVM pool, which is contain the previous JVM. So I wonder, is there any strategy that you decide which or not this VM should be kept or should be killed? Say this VM, I know it's no further use in the future. So would you keep everything or you have some kind of mechanism to decide that?
So just so I understand your question, it's about whether we throw away any JVMs or what we keep in the pool?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. The pool size is configurable, so ideally you're going to configure it such that the pool's getting pretty heavy usage and there's nothing really sitting idle with it. So as long as the JVM isn't like crashed or something goes wrong, we want to keep it in the pool because the longer it's ran, the more code's been jitted and the better chance we have to get a performance improvement.
Right, but I mean, so one thing I can think is that the more you keep it in the pool, that means you consume more memory. So
right.
There must be some trade-off.
So there is some overhead for leaving it in the pool. Right now, so like the overhead really depends on what your system configuration is. So we leave it configurable how much you leave in the pool. We saw on our system, each JVM was taking around 1 gigabyte, but it wasn't growing at all. It just stayed around that memory range.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Josh Lenners, 2 Sigma. Really cool work. I wanted to ask how you deal with clients using different versions of classes. Say you start up a client that's using HDFS client version 1.4.3 versus the client that's using 1.4.2.
Right. Yeah. So what we do, basically when we decide whether we can reuse or not, we check the class path and we build up a checksum of the jars and all the classes on the class path. And then that's actually in the demo, the ID that Hot Tub uses, that's actually a big combination of that checksum to identify it. So if it's a different version, the checksum will be different, and we know we can't reuse that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hello, this is Xia Yang from Shanghai Jiao Tong University. Is there any study on whether the warm-up overhead is specific to Java program? I know that maybe for the native programs, it has to link to some shared libraries. So I'd like to know if any study on that. Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm not sure about native programs and the shared library overhead, but I know for any managed language, we really have the same thing going on, where they're still loading classes dynamically, and they're still, you know, probably interpreting it before they just-in-time compile it. So for any managed language, this should be relatively similar. As far as shared libraries go, I'm not too sure.